Before the awards and the time we've just had with Don and Sue, we were talking about, thanks Jim, we were talking about how Joseph's dad had bought him this long flowing outfit that went right to the ground with those flippy floppy sleeves, remember that? Yep. And how that meant he didn't have to work, perhaps for the rest of his life, like his brothers. And the brothers became jealous. And their jealousy turned into resentment. That means being annoyed at being treated unfairly. And their resentment turned into hatred. And by the time Joseph was about 17 years old, his brothers were on the point of exploding with rage. And to add insult to injury, Joseph had those weird dreams that Hayley read to us about. They were from God, but they were meant to comfort and strengthen Joseph for the hard times that he was going to have ahead. And Joseph, probably because he was a bit young, he didn't think about that, and he was a bit silly. He told his brothers about a couple of the dreams that he'd had. He said, "It was harvest time and we were all in the fields putting the corn into bundles. And one of the bundles rose up." "This bundle represents me," said Joseph. "And the 11 other bundles, well, they represent you. And you're bowing down and worshipping me." Kind of understand why the brothers would get a bit annoyed. And the brothers asked, "Does that mean that you're going to reign over us, going to rule over us?" And you can imagine it made them hate Joseph even more. And then Joseph, still not getting that it wasn't a good idea, he told them about this other dream. He said, "The sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing before me." And his dad, Jacob, said, "Do you mean I'm the sun and your mum's the moon and your brothers are the stars all bowing before you?" You know, Jacob might have done well, don't want to give him parenting advice, but he might have done well perhaps to give a good bit of fatherly advice by suggesting that Joseph kept quiet about these odd dreams. Surely Jacob must have noticed that his brothers were kind of getting jealous, but didn't do anything about it. Instead, he chose a quiet life. He didn't want to risk conflict with any of his children. But he should have done, and he shouldn't have shown Joseph such preferential treatment, giving him the good stuff. Because his failure to act, the jealousy that the brothers had, the anger the brothers had, was ready to explode. And we're going to think about that after this next song, which is "My God Is So Big." If any of our talent group over there know the actions to "My God Is So Big," which I suspect one or two of them might do, they might want to embarrass themselves and come up the front again. In fact, Lorna's saying yes. Come on, you are. You said yes. I can't remember them very well, so I need help. I need help anyway, but that's another matter. Well, if I don't do them, then it doesn't matter. Oh. I'd like some help from the kids if they know it.
Yeah, I'll teach you.
Well, okay, do you want to teach us then? "My God is so."
"My God is so big, so strong and so mighty, there's nothing my God cannot do." And again, "The rivers are his.
The mountains are his. The stars are his." Handiwork too. "My God is so big, so strong and so mighty, there's nothing that he cannot do." Excellent. Come on, anybody who wants to. Anyone who wants to come at the front can come at the front.
"My God is so big, so strong and so mighty, there's nothing that he cannot do. My God is so big, so strong and so mighty, there's nothing that he cannot do. The mountains are his, the heavens are his, the stars are his." "God is so big, so strong and so mighty, there's nothing that he cannot do. My God is so big.
Thank you. Thanks, Francis. Thanks, Lorna. Reminder of how big our God is, and that he's called us to live for him every day. Every day. Our last reading is Amy, who's Genesis 37, 12 to 28.
Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring a word back to me." Then he sent him from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I am looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing their flocks?" "They have moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes the dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." The brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt.
Well, as you know, Joseph and his family, or Jacob and his family, they had sheepies, there you are, Emma, I've done it again, and goats. And in the next part of the story, we're going to find a bit about a place called Shechem, where there was lots of green grass for the flock to eat. And Joseph's brothers all went to Shechem. And back in Genesis 4, before we've started, we read that Dinah was nastily attacked by a man at this place called Shechem, where the boys had gone to take their sheep and their goats because the grass was nice and green. And when she'd been attacked afterwards, the brothers, angrily, they went to Shechem, found the man who'd done it to Dinah, and killed him and some of his family as well. It was horrible, horrible. And then sometime later, three chapters later, in our story, in chapter 37, Joseph's brothers, they head back to this same place at Shechem with these sheep, the same place where this revenge killing has happened. And they went there with the sheep and the goats because the grass was really good. And it was a bit risky because the whole culture was one of honour killings. We hear about that sometimes today. But the whole culture was one of honour killings. And the dead man's family might have wanted revenge on Joseph's brothers. And they might well have planned an ambush or something to kill the brothers. And that might well explain why Jacob said to Joseph, he was so worried about the brothers, that he said to Joseph, "Can you go and see if your brothers are okay and report back to me?" So he sent them on. He sent Joseph on separately. Obviously, Joseph couldn't do anything because he had this floppy long coat on, but he could go and see if they were okay. So off went Joseph. And as soon as the brothers saw Joseph in his long, floaty, flippy, floppy, multicoloured, coaty thing coming over the horizon, the brothers said to one another, "It's the dreamer. Let's kill him." And Reuben, the eldest, he felt a bit sorry for little brother Joseph. So he said, "Well, let's not kill him. Let's throw him in this pit, this cistern, as it said in the version Amy read, in this pit." So when Joseph arrived in his nice coat, the first thing they did was rip it off him because of what it meant to them, what it represented to them. Their dad's favouritism, and that made them angry. Then they threw Joseph into this pit where he might die, he might get killed by a wild animal, he might possibly get rescued, but this was the wilderness. You know, I bet you poor Joseph was shouting and screaming. So do you know what they did next? They sat down and had a picnic. I find that really odd. It says they had some lunch. I just find it really, really odd. I wonder what they had in their sandwiches. But I don't know whether they were, you know, when they were chomping away on their Marmite sarnies and their penguin biscuits or whatever they were doing. But it seemed they spotted a load of Ishmaelites with camels coming towards them. And Judah, ever the entrepreneur, so he's the one coming up with all the ideas, he saw an opportunity. They could get rid of Joseph without killing him and make a quick buck, a bit of cash. "Let's sell him to the Ishmaelites," Judah said, and that's what they did. They sold their brother for 20 pieces of silver. Lucy, you wouldn't do that, would you? Not even if, no, that's good. And not wanting to tell their dad what they'd done, they plotted this big lie of a story to explain why Joseph wasn't with them when they went back to dad. And they did this by killing one of the goats and dipping Joseph's lovely floaty coaty thing in it into the goat's blood. It's horrible, isn't it? And they took it back to their dad and they showed it to him. And they said, well, their dad said, "It's my son's coat. A wild animal has eaten it. Surely Joseph has been torn to pieces." Poor dad. Poor Jacob. He must have felt terrible. He'd lost his favourite wife, Joseph's mum Rachel, and now he thought he'd lost his favourite son. And maybe, just maybe, he thought he could have done something to prevent it. He might not have been able to, who knows? If he'd had a word with Joseph, perhaps about the dreams, if he'd not showed Joseph such obvious favouritism. But he'd chosen to do nothing to change the situation, and that was wrong. But the brother's jealousy was wrong too. You can understand it though. But things were just left to fester. And that's never a good idea, I'll be pleased. But you see, if we allow jealousy, anger, bitterness, or unforgiveness to grow, it kind of goes round and round in our heads, doesn't it? And messes with our minds. And if we don't do anything, it can make us really, really cross inside and feel so resentful or messed up that, like that Coke bottle, you kind of just get to a point where you just, it all explodes, but perhaps a bit more violently than that. It can happen with disastrous consequences sometimes, can't it? As it did with the boys, with the brothers. Don't let things fester. Don't just ignore them. It may not be that they're your fault at all, but it can still be quite destructive to you, both personally and potentially to other people. If you feel that way, there's all stuff going on in your head. Speak to somebody, pray about it. Ask God to help you. It does make a huge difference. But don't just ignore it like Jacob. Jacob was a broken bloke, a broken man. He'd lost his wife, Rachel, and now his beloved son, Joseph. The Bible doesn't say so, but I'm sure that Jacob must have cried out to God as well. And what of Joseph? He'd been a bit unwise, as we've said, telling his brothers about the dreams. But he was a teenager, you know, and you wouldn't have expected him to keep it to himself. He hadn't really done anything that wrong. Who wouldn't have taken the chance to stay at home, to get out of work, to have the best designer gear to wear? He was a decent kid, really. Decent young man, even. But through this situation, he was torn away from his friends and his family, from his loving father and his beloved younger brother, Benjamin. He'd been sold by his brothers as a slave when he was just 17 years old. Sold to people he didn't know, taken to a country he'd never been to before. Now, I bet he was scared. But Joseph showed what a man of courage and character he was becoming. Of course, he'd been hurt by his brothers, very hurt and upset. But he knew that he couldn't afford to waste his life growing bitter, plotting revenge, trying to get even. He would not let his difficult past, this betrayal by his own flesh and blood, ruin the rest of his life. He didn't know how he would cope. It was going to be incredibly difficult. He knew he couldn't do it in his own strength. But he knew that he could look up to God, that he could throw himself upon God in prayer. Otherwise, he might have exploded. And surely so must we look up to God. Not look around at the circumstances, but look up to God. When things look bleak, even if all around us seems to be against us, we can cry out to God and share what's on our heart with him. He will not let us down. And when things look good, we can shout out to God in prayer, in praise, in thankfulness. God loves to hear that too. And at the end of this morning's episode in the life of Joseph, I can tell you that Joseph had only just begun to experience the dark and mysterious events that life was going to throw at him. But I can also tell you that through all of those things, the hand of God would hold him close. And I pray that each of us here this morning would know God's hand holding us close through the good, through the bad, through the ugly, and through the wonderful.